You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 31 October. We've got local trade balance data due 2 p.m. this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Skoglo, PSG, Old Oak. Dis-Chem numbers out yesterday. Clicks last week. Dis-Chem versus Clicks. Does he have a preferred? And banks, they've had a quietly strong October. Okay, the last 2 days, not so good, but still, good numbers coming there. Joe Cavatoni from the World Gold Council on their gold demand trends report. Q3, highest quarterly demand in the history of the survey. We'll dig lots into that. And thoughts from me, trade peace in our time as Trump and Xi Jinping agree to a deal of sorts. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning Markets, MoneyWeb, Club Med South Africa launch price revealed per couple just under 10,000 a night all in. Seems a lot. Bloomberg, Amazon Cloud reports unit grew fastest rate since 2022. Total sales up 13%. The stock is up 13% in after hours trade. Morning market, the US was red, S&P down 1%, Nasdaq off 1.5%. The East is mixed. We've got Sydney 0.1% higher, Tokyo a little over 1% up, Hong Kong a little under 1% down, and Tencent almost 2% weaker. Commodities, all green. Gold futures, $4,012 an ounce. Brent, $64.63. Platinum, $1,610. Palladium, 1,482. The Rand is 1,730. Bitcoin, 108,900. And top 40 opening call, red open expected, about 170 points or 0.2% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Skoglo, PSG, Old Oak. Skok, appreciate the early morning time. Last week was Clicks, this week was Dis-Chem. Same but different, more same perhaps than different. Your thoughts on the Dis-Chem numbers and the between the two? Do you have a preference, neither, but maybe both?
So many questions. I feel like a kid in a candy store. Let's unpack it. I mean, you actually started off this conversation stating it's more of the same. So yeah, it's more of the same. I think pretty much what we saw 6 months ago, we've still saw again. Firstly, I'm not invested in either. So
yeah, me neither.
You know, nobody can say that there's some favoritism. Not going to be the case. Two solid set of results, I thought. I mean, none of them really disappointed in my view. But it's two different, same companies, but different. I mean, Clicks very much the stronger performer. Delivering higher profitability and returns. And then Dis-Chem on the other hand, they definitely had faster revenues. That was really, really good. But they invested heavily in the digital and healthcare initiatives, which weighed in slightly on their margins. So I thought both of them looked pretty good. We had this conversation, I think, about 6 months ago, and you asked me the same thing. You know, if you had to choose, which one will you choose? And back then I said, well, I most probably will choose Clicks because their forecast, I mean, the way they're rolling out these stores, they're just managing to do it a little bit quicker than the likes of Dis-Chem. And that, to me, is where the difference lie. I mean, that's pretty much, and you've seen it again in their forecast. They were talking about 2026. Clicks still very much maintain that they're going to open anything between 40 and 50 stores, very much in line with what they said 6 months ago. Dis-Chem 6 months ago said that they're going to be rolling out 39 stores in 2026. They've reduced that, and they an announcement yesterday, or the results yesterday, said they're looking to roll out another 32 stores. So I think that just maybe for the listeners out there, that's where some of the differences lie. But in general, very, very solid set of results. I mean, turnover growth for Clicks was over 5%. Dis-Chem was close to 9%. EPS for Dis-Chem up 9%, while Clicks, they were up 14.1%. Both really cash generative, so that is solid. So in general, I thought it's you know, very, very good set of results.
Yeah, I take your point. I mean, strong numbers from both, absolutely. And what's a tough economy, but they're doing well. So then to change track and to look at banks, and I have to state, so they're having a good October. I say quietly because, well, I hadn't noticed it until earlier in the week. And of course, as soon as I noticed it, well, they've had a bad 2 days. But we've got, I mean, Absa and Standard Bank, 7%. We've got First Rand, 9%. Nedbank, almost 11. Capitec, almost 12. We've chatted a fair bit over the course of the year. Our banks started the year very cheap. I wouldn't say they're expensive, but I mean, this has been a good period for them on a single month, but even over the course of the year. Apart from Nedbank, there's been some good numbers here from the banks.
Yeah, it's, as I was saying, go quietly, quietly, catch the worm. I mean, they just quietly started to recover. And we've seen very similar trend, let's call it about a year ago, when the property stocks started improving.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they were just so cheap. I mean, when you looked at those interest or dividend yields that they were producing, I would was just so cheap. And now we're sitting here, let's call it 2 years later, a year later after the great results. I mean, and some of these property counters now offering 6 to 7%, not the dripping roast anymore. When you look at the banks, I mean, and just this is for the listeners out there, there's a massive correlation between the movement in specific, you know, banks or financials and the rand's movement. That while you see the rand usually improve, that is when you see the likes of the banks improve as well. And we had a little thing called removal of the gray list a week ago. So for that reason, I thought, remember, this is not just going to help them in terms of the rand improve, that's why the bank should improve. It's also going to improve in terms of ease of business for banks and those kind of things. So that is really, really good. Now, numbers. I think that's the most important thing. You and I often spoke about this. When you look at the banks, and most of these banks are still trading. When I look at the trading, I'm talking about price to books at multiples seen BC. And when I say BC, that's before COVID. I mean, now we're sitting here. I mean, the ROEs, most of the ROEs are, you know, anything between 1.5% and 2% higher, yet they're still trading at these very, very low multiples. And just to add everything, we're going to go back to the dividends. You know my saying always, if I can get more for investing in the bank getting dividends than investing in its money market yields, then I would rather take the stock. And as we sit here, the likes of APSA still trading at an 8% dividend yield, Nedbank 8.8%, Standard Bank 6.2%, and even First Rand, which usually trades at a lower multiple, 5.6%. It's really still looking attractive. I would definitely not be selling my buyings at current levels, even after the recent. I would actually be naughty and say I think there's still some opportunity in our local banks.
I think you're right. The price to books are not crazy. Some lower than others. And your point around dividend yields, absolutely. And I hadn't thought that grey listing, of course, that was paperwork, and that's less paperwork. Well, it's not paper anymore, but it's less for the banks, which will help their cost to income and their profit. Skullclo, PSG, Old Oak, always appreciate the early morning poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Back to those Dischem and clicks. Do you ever preferred? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Joe Cavatoni. He is marketing strategist at the World Gold Council. Joe, appreciate the time. Your gold demand trend, Q3 2025, just come out. The first sentence of the report really highlights it for me. Total demand, including OTC, up 3%, 1,313 tons, the highest quarterly total in your data series. There's a fundamental shift happening here in gold. 10 years ago, we hardly spoke about it. This show's 5.5 years old. Even 5.5 years ago, it was, I don't want to say fringe, but it's become mainstream in a sense, which is a big change.
So, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. The second line in the statement that you're talking to in the report talks about the volume in dollar terms of what's going on.
Yeah.
That number's jumped about 41%. Now, what you're seeing for sure is definitely a better understanding of how the asset performs. Mm-hmm. What are the drivers of moving the gold market forward and higher?
Yeah.
And actually, fundamentally, investors looking at portfolio resilience in a very challenging environment, and a structural shift in how central banks are managing their reserves. Those are the two big driving forces behind an increasing gold price and demand flows.
I'll get to central banks in a moment. That portfolio resilience. My grandfather grew up, traded through the 70s and 80s. Of course, gold was big back then. And he always said to me, 5 to 10% of your portfolio in gold. And I'll be honest, I ignored him until about 4 or 5 years ago. Now I'm at that number and maybe a little higher. And that is the base part of my portfolio. The fact that the price has almost doubled this year is kind of a bonus, but not really the feature of it. It's there to provide that core resilience to a portfolio.
It sure does provide that resilience. And actually, what it does do with economic expansion is it actually provides long-term returns.
Yeah.
And that's where we want to make sure everybody understands that. But it also gives you that protection when the market is turning against you in risk assets and actually prices are declining quickly. You want to have that safe haven nature of gold in your portfolio. Bonds and equities in today's environment are having higher correlation behaviors that are similar. And this is the kind of asset that actually diversifies away from that concerning, you know, similarities and correlations. Gold has a definite unique characteristic to it. Now, when you're talking about allocations, you're looking at, you know, lower numbers than maybe we would have expected on a lot of different surveys that people have done. Maybe it's 1%, 1.5%. But the numbers people are talking to today, and it's starting to show itself in the ETF flows as an example, with a record quarter in terms of overall tons and also in dollar flows, chasing down the ETFs both in Asia and the US, and to that extent as well in Europe. So this is definitely a shift on the investor sentiment. Finding a home for gold, a larger percentage allocation, and basically giving you good returns on the upside and protection on the downside.
Yeah, that bond equity correlation is now almost one, particularly when things go a little bit wild. There's also what surprised me perhaps about this report was less price sensitivity than I would have expected. The fact that, I mean, you know, gold is in October got above 4,000, but during this period it was the whole period above $3,000, and there wasn't that price sensitivity I would have thought we would have seen.
So there's two things that I'd say to that. As it relates to the uncertainty, the risk in markets, and investors being less sensitive to the price, I would agree. Momentum has definitely pushed us in the last month and a half to 2 months for sure, which is why you're seeing a higher level of volatility with gold and some of the pullback that we have been seeing from 60-some-odd percent return in dollar terms to about a 50, 52% return here today. So definitely less sensitivity around the pricing, because risk and uncertainty is really challenging to manage right now. But price is definitely having an impact on another area in the gold market, which I'm sure you want to talk to, and that is jewelry, which still in most of the emerging market world is a large form of savings, auspicious investment, and actually, you know, wealth preservation. There you're seeing China, India as good examples, having continued slowing down of demand in the case of jewelry. So it's not stopping. It's still a major component, but it's much more price sensitive. And actually, that's where I think we're seeing the price impact where the demand is at this stage.
Yeah. Let's get to central banks. The up 28% versus previous quarter. It is a little slower year to date, but there is buying. And there's notable, you mentioned that the Central Bank of Brazil, for example, added gold for the first time since 2021. Kazakhstan, the largest buyer in Q3. And that's another fundamental shift that we've seen over the last, it's been happening for probably, I think maybe it's since the late teens, but fundamentally changed in the last three and a half years.
Yeah, we're into our 16th year of net buying by the central banking community. You know, and what you're seeing this year, still these are significant flows, even though Q3 of 2024 and Q3 of 2025 are showing slowing down. It's definitely running at very significant levels. We're still somewhere in the range of 640 tons year to date. So we're looking very high relative to the overall average over the last 15 years. But remember, putting it into context, this is a shift in how these reserve assets are being structurally managed and the diversification they're looking for in the emerging market central bank community in particular. They're looking at how assets are going to correlate and how they're going to behave and what they can do to not only insulate them on global geopolitical pressures, but also on the home front, the political, the economic conditions within their own borders. What's the best thing they could add? And our survey report tells us over the next 5 years, they're going to be less reliant on fiat currencies, yep, the dollar, the euro, and more interested in the right kind of diversifiers. And that's what you're seeing in terms of the central bank trend continuing. Again, amongst the emerging central banks in particular, emerging market central banks in particular.
Let's touch to supply. Total supply year on year up 3%. Some of that mine production, 2%. Supply, I mean, if I'm a gold miner, I'm trying to get as much out of the ground as I can. I'm looking for new mines. I'm looking to mothball maybe closed mines. But none of that is a quick process. The mines can't sort of keep up. Supply is, I don't want to say constrained, but it's not going to run away in any sense in the short term either.
Well, it's definitely not going to keep pace with what we're seeing on the demand side. And yeah, I think that's the key. So when you think about the growth of mining, and look, the all-in sustainable cost for mining companies is definitely higher than it has been over the last few years. But definitely the mining companies are taking advantage of these higher prices and moving as quickly as they can to get production in, which is why I think you're seeing a higher number in Q3 and possibly a record for 24-25 in terms of the full year, in terms of the outlook. But again, you're right, doesn't happen quickly, and it does take a lot of time. The other issue I'd highlight is the fact that there are mines coming online and some that are coming offline. So in that context, it's looking likely to be stable. Now, on the supply side, though, there is one other element that definitely factors in and probably a really interesting point for your listeners to pay attention to. When prices are high, I've highlighted the fact that jewelry demand is down. Mm-hmm. But what we haven't seen happen is recycling, the other form of supply, coming up at a very substantial level or a pace that we would have maybe expected. And what is that telling us, reading a bit into what they're doing? It's basically telling us that the distressed selling or the urgency to unwind, maybe there's more upside from that side of the community saying, maybe I can't buy more, but I'm not going to necessarily liquidate what I do have.
Yeah.
So I thought that's a very interesting point that the report highlights.
Yeah, they're absolutely holding on. I'm also, I'm expecting to start seeing more hedging from the producers as well, because, I mean, as you say, your all-in sustained cost is probably higher. In most cases, it's probably below $2,000. You can hedge it around $4,000. Do we expect to see more hedging in the quarters ahead?
I think it's a very good observation. It's something that we'll keep a watch on. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been as large as we would have expected.
Yeah.
But then again, this is about, I think, really getting production online more than anything at this stage.
Yeah. Get those new mines working, or get more out of existing mines, as the case may be. We'll leave it there. That's Joe Cavatoni, Marketing Strategist, World Gold Council. Appreciate the time.
Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the Stanlib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Thoughts for me on the trade deal just announced between President Trump and Xi Jinping. So it's a one-year truce. The U.S. is going to be cutting the fentanyl tariff. We saw that coming from 20 to 10% and extending the current truce on reciprocal tariffs. China is resuming soybean purchases and rare earth sales. They hadn't really blocked that, but they'd put some restrictions in. No news on advanced chips, most notably, of course, from NVIDIA. And the agreement, I think, is going to stabilize relations between the two countries at this point. But it doesn't resolve fundamental differences. If nothing else, it's only a one-year deal. And my sense is that both sides are kind of buying time as they try and further reduce dependence on each other. America's going to be trying to find rare earths from somewhere else. China's trying to find other markets for their goods. This is a kick the can down the road sort of deal, I think. So it doesn't do anything to address the imbalance between that U.S.-China trade relationship. Markets don't seem impressed at all. U.S. futures unchanged in the news. China markets are actually down at this point. But frankly, you know what? We take it. Any level of trade peace is good trade peace. That's it for today. We're chatting with Kieran Whitten yesterday from Anchor after the FOMC cut rates 0.25% on Wednesday. But Powell warned investors need to rein in expectations for a December interest rate cut. We asked you, Freight cuts are over in the US for now. It was, and the answers were actually equally split between the three. Yes, they've cut plenty. No more is needed. And we'll watch the data. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday. How does SA escape the trap of economic stagnation?
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.